Hello, my beautiful friends. I am Laurel Bleeden Maffei with Illuminating Souls, welcoming you to this episode of Sleepy Bedtime Blessings, a podcast designed to help you rest, relax, and fall asleep, all while deepening in your connection with your beautiful team of angels who love you so. If we're meeting for the first time, I'm an angelic practitioner, a spiritual teacher, and an encourager of souls. And I offer one-on-one angel sessions, a longer form of support, soul mentoring, and a variety of classes designed to inspire your spirit. And you can learn more at my website, illuminatingsouls.com, where you can also sign up for my mailing list. And I also post regularly on Facebook. But for now, the angels and I are here to help you come into a beautiful place where you can replenish and rest. And we're going to keep you company for the next hour or so, while you connect with the love that's here for you. So this podcast is a mashup of two of my favorite forms of self-care. One is connecting with the angels, which I love and I do every day, almost. And then the other is listening to a sleep podcast that I definitely do every night. I love the genre of sleep podcasts, and I knew that I wanted to add my voice to the mix, so what makes this podcast its own little mashup is that for the first 15 to 20 minutes or so, I will just kind of ramble and talk to you about something spiritually focused. I have no idea what that's going to be. It's one of the joys of being a channel. It'll come to me, whatever that's going to be. And then for the next 40 minutes or so, we go into story time. And story time can be a story from my own life. It might be flipping through the pages of an old cookbook or a TV guide, or something from the Wayback Machine, an old book or publication that I have found on Google Books that's in the public domain. And that's actually what we're going to be doing in this episode. I have found a fascinating book from 1875 that's about traveling tips for ladies. That's not the title, but basically that's what it is, and I'm fascinated by it. So stay tuned. In about 15 or 20 minutes, we're going to go on into story time, and if you want to skip right ahead to that, you'll find the timestamp in the show notes, and you can just go right to that part. But for this part, we are in the let's call in the angels and let's bathe in the love together part of the podcast. So what does that even mean? Well, I've been intentionally working with the angels since about 2004. I have been working with the angels much longer than that, but I wouldn't have called them the angels. My spiritual awakening really started in earnest in 2000. There's an episode about my awakening and all the things that happened. The big catalyst was that it brought me to the University of Santa Monica, where I got a master's degree in spiritual psychology. Was a two-year program, and then I actually went for a third year for an emphasis in consciousness, health, and healing. And then I actually volunteered at the university for many, many years, so I have been immersed in the world of spiritual psychology, which reminds us that we are divine beings having a human experience. And for me, so much of what I had learned and experienced and moved through during that time profoundly changed my orientation to life, my orientation to love of self, love of others, love of this world that we're in. And so a lot of what I share about, especially in the first part of each episode, draws from those experiences. And so I have come to rely upon the ever-present broadcast of divine love that is here for all of us. And it's always here. It's just that we are not always intentionally connecting with it. And just so you know, I don't stay intentionally connected with it all the time. This is also a human journey, and I'm a very human. I am an earth girl. And so while the divine love is always here, I'm not always present to it. But what I have found over the years is if I take a breath and reorient my awareness to the divine love, it is always present. And when I come into awareness of its presence, something in me shifts. I feel calmer. I feel more myself. I feel more hopeful sometimes. I feel more comforted for sure. And so I've come to rely on divine love as an elixir to help me through the roller coaster that is day-to-day life, because all of us are on the roller coaster of life. I don't want to ever pretend that working with the angels and opening to your gifts will mean that life is easy breezy all the time. Life is everything. Life is beautiful and life is hard, right? Life is everything. Life is life. And I have found that having these gifts of connecting with the angels and with God and with divine love really support me in navigating all of it, because all of it is part of life. One of my quarrels with some of the more popular spiritual teachings, like law of attraction and your thoughts create your reality, I believe there are power in those teachings, and I don't believe that those teachings are the only tools in the toolbox. I think that they are effective in certain circumstances, and they're not always the tools that are required for the job. Because what happens if we rely too heavily upon them is that when difficult things happen, when we're in a challenging season, what I've seen happen is that people start wondering, what am I doing wrong? Why are my dreams not manifesting? It's taking whole and complete ownership of all of our life experiences. And that's not really, in my opinion, what these tools are for. To me, these tools remind us that we do have dominion and influence over great expanses of our experiences, for sure. It's not that they don't have any relevance at all. But then there's also life. For instance, I have no power over the weather. I'm not that powerful. Maybe somebody else is, but I certainly have no influence over the weather. What I do have influence over is, how am I going to show up in the weather? What are the stories I tell about weather? How am I going to stay in my well-being regardless of the weather? But I don't have any power over the weather. So there are times when we have more influence than others. Always, though, the divine love is here. Regardless of the weather, divine love is in the room. It's just that we lose sight of that. Or we somehow have divine loved erroneously linked with worthiness or performance-based rewarding or something like that. You know, very Santa Claus kind of philosophy of you have been very, very good or you have been very, very bad. And that's not at all how divine love works. Divine love is much more like the sun. You've heard me say that before. So on a beautiful sunny day, the next beautiful sunny day you have access to, go outside in the sun. It's only going to be for a few minutes, so don't worry. And just notice if you feel as if you are worthy or unworthy of the sun. And I would imagine that there would be no polarity about deserving or not deserving the sun. The sun is. The sun exists. And every single one of us gets to dance with the sun or the moonlight or the rain. Hopefully every one of us gets to see a rainbow. We get to go to a body of water that soothes us and brings us joy. Or we get to ascend a mountain or a tall building where we can see for miles. And these experiences are available to us not because we're really good people, but because we exist. And this is divine love. It exists. It exists for every life form in this universe. And this is why I love working with the angels, because the angels help amplify divine love. They're a wonderful touchstone. Rather than divine love being this ambiguous broadcast, the angels give us a focal point. The angels can be our phone-a-friend. Like, hey, angels, I could use some help down here. It's a great prayer, just so you know. Your prayers do not have to be formal or reverent. A prayer that says, hey, could use some help, is as effective as any other prayer you might bring into your heart. And so, as I record this, there is a lot happening in the world. I know there's always a lot happening in the world, but this feels like an especially poignant time. And I am relying heavily on divine love to help me stay centered and I don't know what comes after that, but I'm going to just stay with helps me stay centered. And probably a lot of other things I can't verbalize right now, but I'm leaning heavily into divine love right now to help show the way. And maybe this will support you too. And so this podcast, this episode, you can listen to while you're going about your day. I know a lot of you listen in your waking hours, or as you're preparing to drift off to sleep. That's my favorite time to listen. Or in the wee hours of the morning if you wake up and you want to go back to sleep. So if you are preparing for bed, I invite you to cozy on up and snuggle on in whatever way works best for you. And just take a few deep breaths in and out, and we'll gently call ourselves forward into the heart of God, or into the heart of the universe or source, or into the heart of all that is love. I'm going to invite the angels to join us, and they're already here, but I love sharing the ritual with you. Beautiful angels on high, I invite you to join us here. I ask that you support us in opening more fully to the divine love and support that is present for each one of us. And I ask that you bring waves of love and healing and light to each of our beloveds hearing this message. I ask that you ease their way, ease their burdens, and assist them in opening more fully to their gifts and abilities, to the wondrous beings of goodness that they are. So, dear ones, just take another breath in and out, allowing this love, this light, to flow to every cell in your body, every thought in your mind, and every emotion in your heart. And allow this love to ripple throughout your life, to all of those that you love, to all of those that love you, and beyond. Allowing this love to travel throughout the timeline of your life, to all of your experiences in the past and all of the ones yet to come, that this matrix of light surrounds all that you are. So just take a deep breath in, and if you have any prayers or intentions that you'd like to share with the angels and with God, I invite you to bring them into your heart now. As this sacred space receives your prayers and intentions. And know that there is love here for you. That you are a blessing from on high. That your angels are bringing to you rays of inspiration, soul whispers to help you on your way. And they're also bringing you a gentle wave of energy to help you get a good expanse of sleep when you are ready to sleep. I say that because if you are in your waking hours and operating heavy machinery, the angels will help you stay alert as well. So, whatever's happening for you right now, whether you need wakefulness or sleep, the angels are supporting you. So take another breath in, just breathing in the blessings of this moment, the blessings that are flowing to you, the prayers that are being said in your name, the love that is being radiated just for you. Receive the love and allow it to uplift you. And so you go ahead and just get cozy. And if you are preparing for sleep, to just drift off whenever you are ready, and the angels will stay with you. And while you rest, or while you go about your day, we're going to move on into story time. And as I've already shared with you, this story time we're going to be reading through the pages of a book that was published in 1875, and it's called Traveling and Its Requirements, Addressed to Ladies by a Lady. So I'm fascinated by this topic. As those of you who are regular listeners know, I am in a phase of my life where I have no desire to travel, I mean, if I could travel like Star Trek, you know, beam me up, Scotty, and I could just, you know, go to London for lunch or something, that'd be awesome. But the physicality of actually packing things up and traveling and getting to airports, and I am just not interested now. But I love to read about traveling. I love to watch other people travel. I really have come into the voyeur time of my life. I love to watch people eat delicious food. I love to watch people go on adventures. I'm definitely an armchair traveler at this phase of things. And I'm good with that. I'm totally okay with that. And I'm really fascinated by this time, 1875, because gender roles were so embedded into everything. And as women, we had to wear so many garments. There were corsets involved. There were long dresses and hats and gloves. And there was propriety. You know, you had to act a certain way. So I have no idea what we are going to encounter in the pages of this book. And of course, we're not going to read the whole book, but we're just going to start. We're going to start at the beginning and see where we go. So we start off with guidebooks. So oftentimes these books would contain lists of other books and other pamphlets and things that you could buy or order depending on where you wanted to travel. So here are just some that we could order if we existed in this time. So it says, the following books can be obtained at any of the offices of Thomas Cook and Son. And I hesitated there because Thomas is abbreviated THOS. It took me a second to figure that out. Or sent post free to any parts of the United Kingdom. So there's Cook's Tourist Guide to Switzerland. There's a guide to Holland, Northern Italy, Southern Italy. A guide to ancient and modern Rome, Venice, Florence. There's one for the buried cities of Campania or Pompeii, and I think it's Herculaneum and their history and destruction. I mean, that's a fascinating time. Right now, I'm somehow on Pompeii TikTok, where whoever it is that I'm following shows something different of Pompeii each day. So fascinated by that. There's something here about going up the Nile, the Holy Land. Yeah, it's fascinating on TikTok because all of these people travel. I'm on one TikTok where someone's going into the Egyptian pyramids and the corridors are so, so small. You have to get on your hands and knees to crawl down them and up them. And I'm thinking, never, ever, ever would I do that. But I'll watch somebody else do it. So lots of different things we can read up. There is an ad for Cook's British Museum boarding house. So this establishment is pleasantly situated within 3 minutes walk of Oxford Street and High Holborn and the great omnibus route to the city and the West End with easy facilities for visiting every part of the metropolis. So that's good to know. There's also Cook's Commercial and Family Temperance Hotel. I'm sure temperance is no alcohol, right? So ladies and gentlemen, for the purposes of business or pleasure, will find at this establishment the ordinary comforts of a quiet home in close proximity to the chief centers of commerce. So you open up this book and you're immediately met with all of these other pamphlets and books and resources for your travels. All right, so we're going to skip ahead to the preface. And this is what it says. It is a strange but actual fact that though guidebooks and hints to travelers have been written in legion, none have hitherto specifically and efficiently devoted a space to the traveling requirements of ladies. No one has felt the want of such a work more than I formerly did, and in this small volume, which I now have the honor of presenting to the public, I have endeavored to supply the results of my own experience for the benefit of those not yet familiar with the continent. Of course, it is possible and even probable that I may have omitted many things of importance, and should any of my kind readers wish for further information on any subject, I shall be most happy to reply to those who may address me care of the publishers, the author. This is written in July of 1875. A few words of advice on traveling and its requirements. As surely as spring succeeds winter and leaves and blossoms burst upon lately barren trees, do we dwellers in cities and towns long to fly to the open country so as to enjoy life to the utmost of our power. Happy are those whose purses and occupations allow them immediately to obey this impulse and to imbibe a new draught of health from nature's ever-bubbling fountain. Fortunately, traveling has become a comparatively inexpensive luxury. The various railways, especially on the continent, have of late done all in their power to make the health resorts of all nations within reach of everyone whose various ailments need change. Lovers of art can revel at will amongst the priceless treasures hoarded up in Italy, or explore the wonders of the Far East at a very slight expenditure of time and money. It is no longer anxiously debated each season between mothers and daughters on one hand, and Papa, who used to be so frightened at the expenses to be incurred on the other, as to whether a change of air is necessary or not. But mamas come boldly out with the assertion that the family must go somewhere. The first difficulty is to decide where to go, the next, what to wear, and lastly, how to avoid too much luggage, always a source of vexation to our male protectors, and when traveling alone in endless worry. And just as an aside, I am a chronic overpacker, for sure. I just want to take my whole house with me so I'm comfortable. I'm really impressed by people who can, you know, just take a backpack and go. To aid all those ladies who contemplate continental traveling, I beg to offer the following practical results of my own great experience. My intention is, firstly, to suggest a tour suitable for the various seasons of the year. Secondly, to call attention to little things likely to be forgotten. And thirdly, to offer advice as to suitable luggage. And fourthly, what to wear and what to avoid. I thus hope to embrace everything which may conduce to the comfort of ladies and so make their trips really enjoyable. I shall not, as a rule, treat on the mode of making up articles of dress that must be left to individual taste, always remembering that intricate trimmings are the greatest possible trouble to pack and often present a most pitiable appearance when released. In choosing each item of the traveling costume, care should be taken to avoid everything, it says outre, O-U-T-R-E, or conspicuous. It will be a proud day for English women when, instead of the remark, so English, being applied by foreigners to the most awkward and unsuitably dressed lady that they may meet, it will be to the best and most appropriately attired. At present, I am sorry to say the former mortifying remark may be continually heard. Ooh, I guess people don't like the way English women are dressing in 1875. It is the greatest mistake to suppose that anything will do to wear on the continent. Is the credit of our own country nothing to us that we should be content to rest under the assertion that English women, though renowned for their beauty, are, as a rule, the worst dressers in the world? I don't know why I think it's just so interesting that that matters so much. But it did. So a little care in choosing and in the manner of wearing articles of dress would soon put us on level with our critics. To most travelers, I would recommend the use of Messrs. Cook and Sons railway tickets as issued at their offices in London and elsewhere. None of these have I ever found dearer than the published fares of the various railway companies, whilst many, more especially in the case of circular tours, are very much cheaper. I consider they entirely obviate all the little vexations and worries which strew the path of an inexperienced traveler with thorns instead of rose leaves, and make his or her tour a weary pilgrimage and perpetual wrangle. For how few people are able to calculate their change in foreign currency in the few moments they are allowed to remain at the booking window before being pushed on to make room for the next applicant for tickets. Then again, in many cases, through an imperfect knowledge or pronunciation of the different languages, tickets are given to a totally different place to that asked for, and I have known friends of mine to go comfortably off a couple hundred miles in the wrong direction, to be turned shivering out in the middle of the night at a lonely village, in a lonely village whose only claim to being anything like the required destination was that its name began with the same capital letter. Like way before the internet, right? What are you going to do? Can't just Google something. For several years, I have traveled on the continent and suffered from all of the above and many more sources of annoyance when quite by chance I was deprived of my usual escort and had to make a long journey alone, so determined to try the tickets and coupons sold in Fleet Street. I was charmed with the result, could calculate my expenditure without making my head ache over long rows of figures, never by any chance missed a train or had to wait in a motley crowd before a ticket office. And what is of most importance still, on arriving at my destination, always obtained a nice room and every attention, however full the hotels might be. Okay, so they're definitely promoting the company that published this book. So that makes total sense, right? Of course you're going to work with them because they're the best. And you're not going to wind up in some random town in Italy shivering in the middle of the night, not knowing where you are, because that would not be good. Okay, so now she's writing about January to March, so where you might want to travel. To pleasure seekers starting during the above months, I would suggest a circular tour in Italy, going via Paris, Marseille, Cannes, Nice, Monaco, Genoa, Pisa, Rome, Naples and Pompeii, down to Sicily, and back by Rome, Florence, Bologna, Venice, Milan, Turin, or vice versa. That's a lot of traveling. So are they saying you're going to do that over 3 months? If returning towards the end of March, the lovely Italian lakes may be advantageously added from Milan. As many large and fashionable cities will be visited in this route, it will be necessary to take at least one really good dress, not strictly an evening one, as abroad high dresses are worn at theaters, dinners, and many private receptions. I should advise a rich black silk made in train. This with a never-failing friend to young and old, a good black grenadine, will be found all that is required for full dress. I mention black as both silk and grenadine admit of colored sash, and either a black or white lace fichu being worn. Just as an aside, I want you to know what a fichu is and how it's pronounced, because I have been listening to the Outlander audiobooks. So the fichu is that piece of lace or fabric that goes into the top of a dress that covers the décolletage. So fichu, your word of the day. So these always make a toilette fresh. I find that I can get dress in London of better quality and cheaper than anywhere else, but I know that some ladies are determined on having a dress or two made in Paris, which I think is an excellent plan, as the style is always better. For the information of such, I may mention that I have been fortunate in finding a really economical yet stylish dressmaker at 30 Rue de Berlin, Paris. Mademoiselle Corbin will always make my dresses during the stay of 2 days, which I think wise to allow myself thoroughly to get over the sea journey before the long run to Turin or Marseille. Lace fichus are cheapest in London and generally imported but from the French houses, so that it is best to buy one handsome set before starting with materials to match, as it is pretty work on the wet days en route for clever fingers to imitate, and most things can be made at a quarter of the prices asked in shops. A serge costume is much to be preferred to homespun for train and boat use. I don't know what some of these terms are, but I'm not going to look them up. We're just going to go with it. I don't know what a serge costume is. As no amount of water or mud can impair a really good one of the former material, this, with one or more half-worn but stylish dresses for the table at hotel, it looks like the table at the hotel wear. Table d'hôte. So, I don't know. The last time I studied French was in 7th grade and I didn't do well. White petticoats are to be avoided. An eider down quilted satin or good thick striped woolen is one absolutely necessary, as the changes of climate may be great on the tour under consideration. Last summer, I tried petticoats made of light stone-colored foulard, trimmed with 3 kilted flounces. These wore and washed capitally and have the great advantage of taking up very little space when folded. One of these would be useful for very hot days. Stockings should be either of spun silk, which is the most luxurious wear, keeping the feet warm without heating them unnaturally, as thick woolen ones are apt to do on long journeys, or next to them in comfort stand find Angola. 3 or 4 pieces of each kind of underclothing will be found sufficient, as washing can always be done in one day from any hotel. A good supply of easy boots is the most essential. If ladies would only be persuaded that an extra quarter of an inch does not disfigure, but rather adds to the perfect appearance of the foot, how much discomfort would be avoided. Button boots are the best, elastic sides being liable to make the ankles swell if worn many hours at a time. Care should be taken on purchasing to have the buttons fastened by means of a slight leathern thong passed through the shank and sewn down between each button. Evening and house boots and shoes are best made of black satin or thin black kid. They are always comfortable and in good taste. Slippers should only be worn in bedrooms of hotels. Hats for the sea journey and rough weather should be of soft felt without feathers, as these so quickly get out of condition, and of pliable straw with a broad brim for sunny days. And my packing list here in 2024 is, how many pairs of yoga pants should I take? How many t-shirts do I need? And a good pair of athletic shoes. She would be horrified at how we dress here in 2024, I'm sure. So April and May, so if you're traveling in the spring, these months are the most favorable for a visit to northern Italy. For example, Turin, Genoa, Baths of Lucca, Florence, Bologna, Venice, Verona, Milan, thence through the Italian lakes, and if time is no object, by the St. Gothard or Splugen passes into Switzerland. Munich can be reached by rail over the Brenner from Verona, and Vienna from Venice or Trieste by the Semmerling Pass by rail all the way. The same outfit as recommended in foregoing tour will be appropriate for this, with the addition of 2 Holland or blue linen costumes, a light dust-colored alpaca or very thin gray-beige jacket will be found invaluable for the hot days, sure to be met with. When using the Italian circular tickets, it is absolutely necessary to have one's destination written in the space devoted for the purpose. This has to be done at the station before starting, but the traveler need not trouble to wait at the usual ticket office. It can be given to the attendant from the hotel, one of whom will be found at the various stations before the departure of each train. The destination, once decided upon and filled in by the official, cannot be changed without special permission of the station master. All right, and now if you are traveling from June to September, there are such a varied number of enticing programs always advertised for these months that choice becomes difficult. The usual ones are Switzerland, Germany, the Rhine, Belgium, and Holland. These are too well known to need special descriptions here. Last year, a new line of railway was opened to the public through the very heart of the Black Forest, leaving the old mail line to Strasbourg at Offenburg and joining the Swiss line at Schaffhausen. I hope I'm pronouncing that name correctly. So I'm rather wary of the conventional holiday trips eagerly embraced by the opportunity of leaving the beaten tracks and joining a party of friends to explore the hitherto little-known beauties of this lovely spot. To do justice to the varied scenery is simply impossible. It is mountainous enough to be grand without giving one the overpowering sensation of awful beauty and solemnity generally felt in the alpine regions, whilst the valleys and plains abound in the loveliest wildflowers. It is not advisable, however, to follow the above line of railway altogether, as carriages can be engaged for any number of days to take travelers from one point to another of the interior of the Black Forest country, or the young and active may find here an admirable opportunity for numerous delightful and instructive walks. A slightly different style of dress to that suggested for Italy is necessary for these tours, and there will be much more occasion for walking. A costume should be chosen of light alpaca, made of convenient walking length with a cape or loose jacket, and trimmed with anything but flounces. These catch the dust and so soon get shabby. I find alpaca delightful wear for walking, as it does not crease if good, is cool in the daytime and not too thick to admit of warm wraps at the night, which are always required even in the valleys. The serge used for train and boat would be found too heavy for walking, and with a pretty French tie and fresh collar and cuffs, the alpaca will do for the table d'hôte, I don't know what that word is, wearing in regions. I should know what that is. I'm not going to go look it up. I was just going to say, should I go look that up? And I don't want to. So I'm not going to. I'm so sorry. But that's okay, because maybe you're asleep and you don't know that I'm mangling this word and I don't know what it means. So we'll do duty to wear in regions where very little luggage is practical, such as on a visit to Chamonix, where all heavy boxes are usually left at Geneva or Martigny. Oh my God, I don't know what that word is. I'm so sorry. Martigny. Martigny? I apologize. Okay, let's go back to October and December. I know how to pronounce those 2 months. So these months are the most difficult to pass pleasantly in England, owing to our variable climate so fatal to invalids or delicate persons. Therefore, towards the end of October, there is a general exodus to the balmy south, or long-cherished plans of a visit to Palestine and Egypt are put into execution. These tours are so cleverly managed and arranged by Messrs. Cook with the assistance of experienced dragomans, that ladies, however helpless or nervous, need no fear to explore these lands of surpassing interest. As altogether, about 30 days will be passed on horseback by those who are strong enough, a proper style of dress for this exercise must be chiefly considered. It is a good plan to get made by a tailor a short habit, with simple jacket, not too tight or thickly wadded, of light gray cloth, thin but good, as the wear is hard. The skirt must be lined up to a height of 15 inches with a thin, soft American leather. This can be sponged when necessary. The under trousers to be of dark flannel, lined with chamois and faced at the bottom with the same kind of leather as the skirt. Then, at a good waterproof shop, have made a perfectly plain skirt of the finest possible waterproof silk or alpaca, the same material as the coats made for gentlemen. It must be cut in a circular form so as to avoid too many seams, and must fit closely round the waist and button down the front so as to entirely cover the cloth skirt. The then a blouse or loose jacket of the same material, large enough to slip over the habit and confined at the throat, wrists, and waist by a band. A hood should also be added. The sleeves must have ventilating pieces inserted under each arm. This overdress should weigh about 6 or 8 ounces. An ordinary waterproof, large and made with hood and sleeves, will do very well if preferred. Either can be folded and attached to the saddle, but the overdress or cloak must be taken as the rains are both violent and sudden. Habits made of waterproof cloth are too hot and will not stand long-continued rains. The heavy luggage will have to be left behind on entering Palestine, as everything has to be carried on horseback. Each person had better take a good-sized bag, such as described in my advice on general luggage. It must be waterproof. Shawls and rugs, of which travelers must take a good supply, should be placed in a large waterproof pocket made of American leather, shaped like a nightgown case, and be given to the servants to pack inside the bedding so that they may be kept dry for night service and camping. Wow, that's a lot going on horseback. I guess that makes sense because they wouldn't have had railroads at that point through the region. For general wear in towns en route, the same quantity and style of dress as recommended for tour in Italy will be found to answer every purpose. A warm jacket will be needed, also a soft hood made of cashmere and wadded for outdoor sleeping in tents. A pliable felt hat as light as possible and with brim large enough to screen the face, of a gray color and very simply trimmed, will be best. A stock of gauze veils, blue and green, will be useful. All right, let me just tell you, even in 1875, had I wanted to visit, if I read that description, I'd be like, yeah, not gonna go. No thanks, I'll go to Paris. Take me to Paris. A visit should be paid to the family doctor before starting, as slight indispositions caused by a change of water, outdoor sleeping, and overfatigue are very general. So this friend in need should be asked to make up or prescribe certain simple medicines to be taken with one in case of sudden seizure. It is always a bad plan to leave things of this kind to strange doctors, as different constitutions require different treatment. Oh, that would be bad. You're in the middle of the desert, riding a horse, sleeping in a tent, and you are slightly indisposed. She's saying this very delicately because of the change of water or food. That would be so miserable. I don't know if you've figured this out. I am not a hardy traveler. I need fluffy bed hotels if I'm going anywhere. So to those, Before I go on, I would totally watch other people going on this trip, though, just so you know. I would be riveted of watching this. I would not want to do it myself, though. Okay, now back to what she's writing here. To those who have already visited the Holy Land in the south of France, I strongly recommend a trip to Algeria as a pleasant way of spending December and January. The season in Algeria lasts from October to March, inclusive, but the heavy rainfalls take place in November and February. Therefore, I think December the best time to start. The climate is most captivating, and the strange combination of Arab and Moorish ladies, Turcos, Zouaves, Spaniards, Maltese, French officers, and ladies in the latest Paris fashions form a never-ceasing panorama. For a stay of 2 months, 3 or 4 washing costumes will be required, also one made of light woolen tweed, not thicker than flannel. This will be found useful for expeditions into the interior of the country. For general wear, the same outfit as suggested for the south of France. All right, and now she's going to talk about traveling to America. As it will be quite the fashion during the summer season of 1876 to pay a visit to the exhibition to be held in the city of Philadelphia, adding a consequent tour through the United States, I think a few special hints on outfit and necessaries for this voyage will be acceptable to my readers. Even in the summer, it is never warm enough on the North Atlantic to dispense with furs and warm wraps. A large jacket with soft hat made with a piece to turn down over the ears should be taken. Also, a fur-lined carriage rug. This will be found a great luxury to passengers fortunate enough to get up on deck. For the sea voyage, choose a simple dress of soft, warm tweed of a dark gray color made in the princess form and buttoned down the front from the neck. The skirt must be furnished with pockets on either side, made deep enough to hold little things likely to be required whilst lying on the berth, such as a few pocket handkerchiefs, smelling bottle, eau de cologne, small brush and comb, scissors, etc. A more stylish dress must be worn for landing. Very warm underclothing is indispensable. Indeed, a flannel suit, drawers, chemise, and petticoat should be worn both night and day. Petticoats should, if possible, be made with shoulder straps or attached to a garment suspender. I have worn one bought at Hope's 61 New Bond Street, London West, and find it exceedingly comfortable at all times whilst traveling, and more especially during seasickness, when all bands should be avoided, it being very injurious to health to have the waist tightened when in a recumbent position. Very easy boots for stateroom wear and fur-lined overshoes for deck promenade. American ladies dress very expensively and in the latest European fashions. Therefore, care must be taken that all costumes be made in a thoroughly stylish manner and the quality be unexceptionable. For a stay of 3 months, I should suggest taking 2 traveling costumes, one for sea voyage and one for inland railway journeys. 2 handsome black silk dresses, one in train, one walking length, one light silk, of some pretty soft shade made with low bodice to wear under high dresses of thin material, which can be varied such as a black silk grenadine, white ditto, white Indian muslin, Hamburg neck, black lace, etc. These will be required for dinners, theaters, and small receptions. In America, as in Paris, one wears high dresses except for operas and balls. 1 afternoon toilette, a brown silk foliard skirt and sleeves with a cream-colored damask silk overdress would form a pretty style for this. A black silk velvet jacket and a black lace shawl will be found invaluable. It is advisable to take a good supply of boots, gloves, and millinery of every description, 2 or 3 pretty bonnets suitable for fêtes and theaters, and for a change of hats. No jewelry should be worn on the sea voyage, but a few good ornaments should be taken to match dresses for land wear. It is a good plan to wear everything once before starting, so as to avoid custom house duties, as these are very high in America. Consequently, all clothing, and in fact every article required for the toilette, is much dearer there than in Europe. Well, I don't know about you, but I am very happy not to be a lady traveler in 1875. I can only imagine how crabby I would be with all of those garments and layers and requirements. I mean, I can't imagine it was easy. You know, men had it so much easier. You put on a pair of pants, a shirt, and a jacket, and you're done. I'm so glad we have gotten away from these times. But, I don't know, we have our own complications, so there you go. If you were a lady in 1875, these would be some of your considerations if you were traveling. So, we'll read more of this book another time, because we're only up to page 39, and there's 113 pages, so I'm sure there's much more here to explore. But for now, my beautiful friend, I am going to wish you the sweetest of dreams. I'm so grateful to have this time with you. Thank you for allowing me the blessing of keeping you company. So, we'll talk again soon. And in the meanwhile, know that you are loved. And I am so deeply, deeply grateful for the gift of you. Thank you.